Order and welcome everyone. It's great to see some familiar faces from our previous meetings. I am going to go ahead and share my screen and just bring up our presentation. Just wanted to introduce our facilitators tonight. Myself from FFCARE, I'm a senior planner and senior associate and the project manager on this project. Heidi Nielsen is joining me from FFCARE to help facilitate the discussion. And we also have Ted Knowlton, who is the Deputy Director for the Wasatch Front Regional Council. And Ted is here to help discuss sort of the connections between transportation and housing and the regional picture and how that relates to what's going on in South Ogden in regard to housing. So I will go ahead and bring up the share screen and get them for me. So this is, as Mayor Porter mentioned, this is the third in a series of town halls that we've been having, the goal of which is really to just start some discussion and hear some comments and feedback from the community. We're mostly interested in knowing just what are some common thoughts and concerns or things that people are excited about in regard to the general plan. And the general plan itself is just, it's a citywide document that is a guiding policy document. And so for decisions that the city makes in regard to land use and transportation, parks and open space and capital improvements, the general plan is designed to be a tool for guiding those decisions that the city makes and, you know, helps set a roadmap for the vision that South Ogden has for its future, recapping where we are right now and where the city would like to go in the future, and also taking into account the context surrounding the city. So knowing that the regional context plays a role in what South Ogden be able to achieve in regard to the vision. So our focus topic for tonight is housing. And like the previous town halls, we've got a series of polling questions that we'll put out to you one at a time, and then we'll have a discussion with the audience following those questions once we see what the questions are. And Heidi, do we still have the sample poll question? Okay, so yeah. Just to start off, we'll go ahead and just do an example poll. If you've been here before, you already know that you voted for your favorite animal for the city mascot, but we'll go ahead and do that poll again, and then just show how the format will work for tonight's discussion. Oh man, raccoon is getting beat out. Okay.
Susie, I think that's everyone who can vote.
Okay, great. So we'll do a question like this. You'll vote. We'll end the polling and then share the results. And from here, then we'll just launch into a discussion and we'll say, it looks like, you know, 2 out of 3 people think the moose is going to be the best mascot for South Ogden City. Let's hear from somebody that selected moose and find out a little bit more about why they think that's the best mascot. You know, we'll go into a discussion. You know, for example, if Val was a moose fan, she'd be able to chime in and tell us a little bit about why she chose the moose. So that's the structure of tonight. And we'll go ahead and just close out that poll. And then tonight, you know, with our talk about housing, we wanted to break it into 3 different categories. Housing is, you know, it's something that everybody needs. Everybody knows about housing. It seems like it should be like simple and straightforward, but it's a very complex topic. And what we want to do tonight to break it down a little bit is to zoom in on a few different sub areas in regard to housing and how the general plan might structure the direction the city takes and the responsibility the city has for providing, for example, affordable housing types. So topic number 1 is specifically talking about affordable housing types and some of the strategies for how South Ogden can provide affordable housing. The second topic we'll get into is housing and equitability, so talking about social equitability. And the third topic is talking about housing security and stability. So those are our three topics. And maybe to get started, we'll go ahead and just bring up the first polling question, which is going to ask you about your perceptions on affordable housing. And so,
sorry, I'll get there.
The mascot, you know, the mascot is very important. So I think it's okay. Let me see that twice.
I clicked the wrong button. Okay, question one.
Okay. And so for this one, you know, when you hear a mix of housing types, what we want to know is what type of neighborhood comes to mind when you hear a mix of housing types and sizes. So we've got five different options. I'm going to go ahead and read them because we are recording this and we just want to make people that are might just be listening aware of the different choices. The first choice is a mixed-use neighborhood with a combination of apartments, townhomes, and commercial uses. The second choice is a neighborhood with housing options for new and or first-time home buyers, family households, empty nesters, and seniors. The third option is a residential neighborhood with a mix of smaller starter homes and larger sized homes. The fourth option is a residential neighborhood with a mix of attached townhomes and detached single family homes. And the fifth option is a residential neighborhood with a mix of apartments, attached townhomes, and detached single family homes. So those are your five options. And what we just want to know is, you know, when you envision that mix of housing types and sizes, and you're thinking of the South Ogden context, what comes to mind?
And it looks like everyone in attendance has voted.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and we'll end the phone.
Lee, sorry to interrupt. Can I get one of staff to make sure there's no one like in a waiting room or something if there is one of those today? I just had a resident say they couldn't get on through the website, which I did. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Could you just troubleshoot that for me real quick? That'd be awesome.
There are some issues with
Facebook that we're trying to work through. I think Facebook link's not working through. The website is working, but Facebook link is
well,
not for whatever reason.
The website isn't either. For some reason, it just
Lisa,
saying...
Lisa, I can send you the invite again, if that would be helpful.
Well, I just re-uploaded it. Let's see if it works now. So hold on and just keep going, and we'll see what happens.
Thanks. We'll check on that, and hopefully we've got a couple more people that are going to join us. And if it makes sense, if we've got a few more people that jump in, we can always relaunch some of these polls if you want to circle back to any of these to discuss them a little bit more. Go ahead.
Just we send that link to Lisa, and then Lisa, if you could go ahead and just post that on Facebook, that'd be great.
Of course.
Thanks, Heidi. It looks like we're split 50-50 between, you know, people thinking a mix of housing types and sizes reflects a neighborhood that has housing options for essentially different periods in the life cycle. You might be a first or new home buyer. You might be looking for a house for family households, empty nesters, or seniors. And so it's kind of that mix of people at different stages in the life cycle that comes to mind. The other option that people selected, that residential neighborhood that has really, you know, the broadest expanse of housing types. So it could be single family homes, it could be attached townhomes, but it also could be apartments. And so it's a very wide mix and diverse combination of housing types. Okay. And so we could just start off just for people that answered the first option, that we're thinking more about the people and their point in the life cycle. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about how you feel that is represented right now in South Ogden, and maybe how that might be better served in the future to accommodate those different stages of the life cycle. So maybe just to review, if you're muted and you want to unmute, do they need to raise their hand and have us unmute them, Heidi? Okay.
Yes.
So if you are ready to chime in and want to speak to selecting a choice about the different types of buyers in the life cycle, go ahead and just raise your hand. And to get there, if you go into the participant panel and go down to the bottom right, those three dots, that's where you'll get to the raise hand. And once we see that hand, we can go ahead and unmute you and have you jump in.
I really like this concept of the life cycle, and I guess as somebody thinks about their own life or you know, their family members, and then you think about South Ogden, is there a point in that life cycle where you feel like, well, maybe South Ogden could use some more options for fill in the blank stage of life? Which stage do you think needs a little bit of help? Or which stages do you feel like South Ogden is doing really great at already? What are your thoughts?
Okay, I don't have the three dots in the bottom of my thing, so I don't know why it has invite and mute me, but not raising hand. So I can raise my hand if that's okay, Susie.
You're totally fine. Go ahead, Val.
And I responded to the other one, but to answer Ted's question about the life cycle, for as small as South Ogden is geographically and even population-wise, it does a really dang good job of actually covering all of it. I think that's what's unique with South Ogden is that I've had friends that grew up here and their parents lived here. And again, that's unique. And I don't feel like that has to be every small city unto itself has to do this, because there's surrounding cities that can also fill that need. But South Ogden's unique in that you can go around the corner and live in a house that was a starter home while, you know, mom and dad lived just a couple streets away in a lot larger of a house. And then on the other side of the highway, you've got your, I don't know what the subdivisions are called, but you've got your they're attached patio homes. And they're green, like green emerald. I don't know. You, Mayor probably knows what I'm talking about. It's across from Sinclair. But you've got those areas that have for the more senior living and stuff. So, yeah, I just don't think we have a real gap there. But that's from a resident's point of view. So,
And I'll just throw in, too, one of the reasons I'm excited about the townhome projects, the apartment complex projects that we have coming in, is because I think we're going to see that in there. I think we're going to see the young couples, the single people without children. You're going to see some of the older people that want to downsize, and a real cross section in between. I think they're all going to be living in these same areas, and so that's my excitement for this multifamily that's coming in. Not just for the economic boom to the city, because I believe they're going to shop local, impact fees, they're all going to pay a road improvement fee. I think all those things are a positive. But I think it's the people, the new people that are going to come in are going to add an energy, and there's going to be a diversity within that same block that we haven't really, I don't think, has seen as well before, or that we used to see more of.
Yeah, I think it's a great comment here just about the diversity of people that you start to get when you have a mix of housing types in a neighborhood, and also the way that helps lead to neighborhood stability. And you know, you sort of have a little bit more room for ebb and flow, rather than, you know, maybe having a neighborhood that's all one type of housing that ages and then, you know, goes into maybe some decline all at the same time. While other neighborhoods might be, you know, new and, you know, a little bit nicer quality or more amenities, and you've got sort of that imbalance of that. You know, that leads us into the next topic that we'll get to in a few minutes about equitability. But I think having that mix of housing and mix of incomes in an area is just a great way to help provide you know, affordable housing, but also that aging in place and life cycle housing without needing to lose your social network. So you know, you might need to move into a different type of home as you age, or you want to move up to a different type of home, but you just, you don't necessarily want to lose your social network or community network that you've established already. And so having that mix of housing types is great that way. And so I think the next, the sort of maybe area of, if we want to hear from people that mentioned the different types of housing, one of the things that we wanted to talk about is sort of that concept of a starter home, and what people maybe historically thought of as a starter home, Ogden, and what that is now based on, you know, housing prices continue to rise much faster than incomes and wages are rising. So is there anybody that wants to chime in on sort of that perspective of what a starter home maybe was, or what you conceive it to be now, and what that might be in the future? Kent has his hand up, and so if you can unmute Kent,
you bet. There you go.
Right, and
oops, sorry.
Yeah, we had him unmuted, and we'll get him.
Sure. I'm just
sorry. Be patient with us, Kent. We'll get him unmuted in a second.
There we go.
All right. Great. Thanks, Kent. And maybe just to start off, Kent, can you tell me how long you have lived in South Ogden City?
Since 2003, so that's like 15 years.
Well, okay.
A couple of years will be 20 years.
Yeah, okay.
I'm thrilled to see the starter homes, or the old homes that used to be the only homes to be starter homes now. Some wonderful neighbors. I don't know about the apartments coming in. They come and go, where the starter homes that we see these young people and just have a good time with their vitality. I do notice that in my single family home, I've worked for almost 80 years for, on a fixed income, it's hard to pay taxes. So I'm using the federal stimulus money to set aside to pay my taxes. So it may be that one of these first years, if the taxes go up, I'll have to sell and go into one of those detached single family homes that don't have a basement or don't have stairs. But so far, so good. The taxes don't go up.
Mm-hmm. Great. And I think that's a great point, Kent, is that when we think about housing costs and housing affordability, that it's really, there's, you know, many things that go into the package. It's not just your rent or, you know, the housing mortgage, but it's the utilities, it's the cost of your transportation for getting where you need to go. It's the taxes, and as property values go up, taxes go up too, and that, you know, that can severely impact somebody who, you know, maybe has already paid down the mortgage on a house, but all of a sudden they're seeing that value, you know, skyrocket, and their taxes are skyrocketing, and that's a much different financial impact than they had when they first bought into the house. So those are some really great thoughts, Kent.
I got out of California at the top of the housing bubble, and that's why we're able to pay for a new home.
Mm-hmm.
And but those housing bubbles break, as they did after I left, but California is still expensive, but in Utah, markets are going way up. I don't know if we could, you know, it's hard to sell and move into a smaller place because of all the costs and everything. So hopefully we can stay here the rest of our lives.
And okay. Do we have anybody else? I don't know if we figured out if the raise hand function is working or not. So if you don't see the raise hand option, and you want to chime in and say something, then you can also just put the note in the chat box, and we'll work to get you.
Victor has raised his hand.
Okay, great.
Hi, my name's actually Lori Pacheco.
Hi, Lori.
I'm using his phone. but I also wanted to say that I think starter homes, too, are multi-family homes, so maybe not a single family home anymore, but a lot of the townhomes and stuff that are being built are more affordable for folks to get into home ownership.
Yeah, that's a great point, Lori, and I think that was one of the things that when we were talking earlier this afternoon, that concept of a starter home has shifted just because of the rising prices of housing. And so a starter home, and really, you know, we need to broaden our definition of a home. It's not, you know, just a single detached home on a lot, but it could be a condo, it could be a townhome, and it's really based on, you know, price point and what people can afford that doesn't cost burden them and add up to costs that are more than about 30% or a third of their income on a monthly basis. So thank you, Lori, that was a great comment. And so Val made a comment before that, you know, she felt like South Ogden had a pretty wide range of housing types and housing options. And maybe just kind of getting back into that mix of the housing. Is there anywhere where a different type of mix, you know, is envisioned than what's there right now? You know, some of those transforming, redeveloping areas that are bringing in a few different housing types. But overall, I think the city has that mix of housing types. But maybe the next question, and Ted, this might be a place for you to jump in, is, like, are we linking the right housing types to the right places based on access to the regional transportation and transit networks? So, Ted, is there any thoughts that you want to help spark some discussion in that regard?
Well, affordability is, you know, it's a function of how much you need to spend for rent or mortgage, and it's also a function for how much you spend on transportation and so that can be part of the mix. If the city's thinking about, if you all are thinking about tweaks to zoning, the question of, well, where's the transit service could be something that you think about. And I know that you have some really frequent bus routes that go through town, but what do you all think about that concept? Essentially, where would you explore changes, if changes need to be explored? Where would you explore them?
Great. Thanks, Ben. Is there anybody with their hand up that wants to chime in on that?
Susie, I wonder if we should re-roll the question, since we've had people join.
I was thinking the same thing. Heidi, let's just relaunch the poll. We've had quite a few people join in. Good to see you, Josh and Lanny and Kathleen and Sally.
And if you voted the first time we launched this question, please go ahead and vote again.
Mm-hmm.
while those results are being taken, if it's okay, Lise, can I just interject? I think you're talking about what's missing, as Sally's comment on the chat is that everything that's being newly developed is rental. So I think what might be missing would be new townhomes or newer, smaller houses. Because this affordability issue is tough, because these rents are more than my payment, as my mortgage is. Most of you probably are seeing that as well. So that's a real difficulty, and we've talked about that as a city, is how do we get affordable housing? And other than government subsidized, we're not quite sure how to do it, other than try to make it, in a sense, less restrictive on developers so that they can build a less expensive product and charge less rents. But that's really a hope that hasn't really been seen, because they can charge high rents because of the high demand. So if there's things missing, maybe it's that. Maybe it's the duplex or the fourplex instead of these larger projects.
Mayor, I couldn't agree more. I agree with Sally on her front, that saying that we want to be careful that we don't offset the balance we have of home ownership to now just doing all these rentals. I don't think that does anybody a service, really, other than just, anyway. And so I think you hit the nail on the head. South Ogden developed organically. So you do have these neighborhoods that already have a duplex. You have a neighborhood that has the fourplexes. So how do we get back to kind of maybe our roots versus just saying, oh, well, we need to get density in because we need to make this affordable, because it's not affordable. And until we get a market correction, South Ogden also had the advantage of, before the market's done what it's done, of being affordable. So we can't really be beating ourselves up over, you know, things that baseline already had affordability, and it's not going to be the city's, it's a sticky wicket problem. There isn't really one solution. It's been around forever and ever. So I just don't want to see us as a city go in a direction of going, oh, we got to make this affordable, because we already have so many affordable options, and we already have organic apartments that are well taken care of. Because I live down the street from one that I don't even know how many units are there. They might have, I don't know how many units are actually on my street, but they're small, they're individually owned, and they're not these giant developments that nobody really cares about except for the developer that developed it and then has left the city, and now we're, you know, left with all the calls to do it. Because again, there's going to be more calls because there's more people. That's just the function of that. But with these smaller ones, they just have better care. So that's, I would just love to see what the history of how South Ogden, their original zoning was that made it develop the way it did. And it's not this forced flavor of the decade of form-based code. So that's my really long answer.
The objective that you are both getting at is more home ownership and helping, giving people the opportunity to get into the ownership cycle and build equity. Is that part of it, or is it that plus other things?
I think there's some of that. I also think that these developers, as long as they meet the code, we can't say you have to sell these. And so it's really up to market forces. It's up to the free market, those kind of things. And it's a fine balance for government to say you have to do this, you have to do this. We can zone, but we can't say you have to sell these individual townhomes. You can't rent them. That's not within our purview.
No, yeah. The only thing that is would be that the type of housing product that you're offering is going to lend itself either to purchase or rent. And then, and even that, places in Arizona and Nevada are blowing that away, and you have single family homes, developments that they're rentals. They're intended to be rentals. So yeah, you're exactly right. You can't control that, but you can buy the housing products you're approving.
Susie, we have another question. You can go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I wasn't sure if it was for me. Yeah, this is Lori again.
Lori, go ahead.
So some of the housing maybe that you're referring to that becomes just affordable over time, like you were talking about the duplexes and the fourplexes and things that are kind of rooted into neighborhoods within the community. Sometimes those are referred to as naturally occurring affordable housing, just because they, over time, keep their rents relatively low compared to regional housing markets. And then, like she was saying, some of the larger developments that come in and the density that you sometimes need to accommodate the need for housing and affordable housing. So with your denser projects, maybe talk to the developer about offering mixed housing, where they would set aside a certain number of units that could be affordable or set at a little bit lower than market rate that could target the service workers and folks that might not have as high as income of others. And I would think over time, the market units would help, the revenue from the market units would help offset some of those units that were set aside to be affordable. A lot of times they have, he mentioned the government subsidized programs. Sometimes you can work with your local housing authority and they will do project-based that, you know, there could be the potential for developers to work with them to put just a handful of units in there that would be subsidized, or the LIHTC, the Section 42 units, the low-income housing tax credit. But those are another way to bring affordability to a property or a new development by not, it wouldn't be the whole complex that was subsidized, but maybe just a few units that were set aside for such, and rents that are kept at a certain area median or target certain area median incomes. So that's all.
Great idea.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. Those are great comments, and I think that falls in line with some of the discussion that we were having before about, you know, that mix of housing as well as mix of income and mix of household types in a neighborhood, and having that type of diversity, you know, across the city, not just like, oh, this is our diverse neighborhood, but having a more holistic approach to affordable mixed housing neighborhoods across the city. So it's been great comments, and I think if we look at the poll results with the bigger group, that we actually see a similar pattern of responses that people are thinking of that pretty broad spectrum of housing types when they think of mixed housing, and also just the life cycle type of household. So it's great to see that we're seeing a little bit of consistency in that regard. So I think we'll go ahead and move on to topic number two and just bring up the screen again. I think you guys can still see that. I'm trying to look at you guys and look at my screen. But our next topic is thinking about equitability and housing. And so we've got a few different options here. There's no right answer, but we want to know which is, when you think of equitability and housing, you know, what comes to mind? What resonates most with you of these different answers? We've got five. The first one is housing cost. The second one is rental assistance or mortgage assistance. The third is protecting against displacement, either due to rising rents or housing prices. The fourth one is just that rising inequality with incomes, where a lot of people are not moving up in income, but some of the income is going to a smaller segment of society. And then the last option is just integrated mixed income neighborhoods. And so I'll give you just another minute or so to put in your thoughts about affordability and housing.
Susie, what does equitability mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. So equitability, you know, when you're thinking of housing, it's, you know, I think ensuring that people have access to safe housing, to stable housing, to housing that's in good condition, and that they're able to do so and live in a safe neighborhood. So that's one perspective on equitability. And I think making sure that we have housing that supports the range of income types, because we're always going to have a range of income types, and we need to make sure that we're providing an opportunity for people to feel like they have housing that is affordable, but also safe and in good condition, and that it's not a situation where they feel uncomfortable in their house. Their house should be their refuge. So that's one thought. Do you have anything else you want to add to that, Ted or Heidi? Or anybody else?
Well, I can speak to or build on that with just within my neighborhood. I'm a resident of Pleasant View, so down the road a piece from South Ogden. And we've seen, we don't have a lot of what would be considered high density housing in this city. It's a lot of single family residents, but so we don't have the mix at a level that an Ogden or South Ogden might have. And how that impacts the character of the city, that's something you and I were talking about earlier today. But I do have anecdotally, friends and acquaintances who would like to move to the north end of Salt Lake City and into Weber County. And part of that is because our housing is still within reach, and our housing prices have gone up, but maybe at a more we're still I think in an attainable price for some housing, and I'll admit I haven't looked at rental rates in Ogden for a while or Pleasant View, but I've noticed the housing cost is.
Okay, so I've got a question for the attendees. When you think about fairness and equitability, what are some issues that you think might need to be discussed in South Ogden? You can throw it into the chat bar, or you can certainly raise your hand and verbalize, or both.
My hand raising thing's not working. Oh, yeah. So I have invite and mute me.
Go for it. Yeah.
So I think one of the biggest issues, and it's not just South Ogden, and it's the entitlement part. It's the I should live where my parents live because I've graduated from college, so now I need to do that. And so I think the whole context of the discussion's been so skewed to be that it's you can't, your parents worked 40 years to get to where they're at. And so there's just these unrealistic expectations of people coming in and saying, oh, well, this isn't fair. I mean, because when I grew, as I was younger, you had to just kind of keep driving till you could qualify, because that's just the way it is, because you can't just be given things. And so I have a hard time as we frame these discussions to say that, and again, I go back to that South Ogden has so many options already that I don't think anything's necessarily broken in that regard. And so so I throw in there that our biggest issue is entitlement. And that's a social issue, right? That's not a land use or a planning thing. But anyway, that's some of my thoughts.
It's Susie Lori has her hand raised as well.
Great. Yeah, let's go to Lori, and then looks like Josh has his hand raised. So we'll hear from Josh after Lori.
I was just going to say, when I think of equitable housing, I think of inclusion, equal access to opportunity, and diversity.
Sorry, Josh. Now try it.
Okay, go ahead, Josh. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Josh, I believe there's an issue with your microphone. We're not picking up your comments.
One person said, it seems the same people are always affected negatively by increased density. In other words, the lower income group is disproportionately affected. And I think it's that's an interesting comment. And I wonder if that person, I'll refer to them as Z899BL. Would you like to elaborate? Tell us what you're thinking about on that. And you can type it in the chat bar if you want. Like what kind of negative impacts? Or how does that work? Sorry, I didn't mean to get in the way of Josh. I think, Josh, you were going to say something. You're welcome to.
And I think Josh was having some problems with his microphone. Just to talk a little bit more about that, Ted, as far as the lower income group, when we were looking at the poll results, I think it's indicative of how complex this issue is with equitability that we had a pretty even distribution of, you know, selection of the responses that people understand that it's not just one thing. It's, you know, it's talking about integrating your neighborhoods. It's the income equality issue. It's that direct cost related issue of either needing help with your rent or your mortgage, and also looking to protect against displacement. And, you know, when we're talking about the people that are affected negatively by density or by housing, you know, one of the things that maybe isn't always thought about is how it impacts just the stability of children that are in those households, and, you know, that fear of either being evicted or needing to move constantly, and that disruption to their lives from, you know, having that non-stability in their housing situation. So that's something that I think is kind of a related issue. So just wanted to, you know, bring that up a little bit. And let's see, do we have any? Lori's got her hand up again. And
I just wanted to add one more thing to what you were saying there as far as the stability of the children and needing that. I think if COVID has taught us anything, it's also taught us that housing is healthcare. You know, people have had to stay home to stay safe. And I think that goes even broader than COVID. I mean, people need a roof over their head, and people deserve that. It's, you know, it's a right, safe place to call home.
Mm-hmm. So I think Josh rejoined us, and let's see if we can.
All right, can you guys hear me now?
Yes. Yay.
Okay.
Hi, Josh. Welcome. That's okay. Thanks for coming back.
So the comment I was just going to make was based on what Val was saying, and I agree with her wholeheartedly about the entitlement, especially with today's generation, but I was thinking about my parents, and you know, they got into a starter home, which was a huge home. And the difference, I think, is that starter homes these days don't even exist. You're looking at homes that people get into, and they're $500,000 here on the Wasatch Front, or close to $250,000, and which is absolutely insane, especially with the wage disparity, because wages aren't keeping up with housing costs or growth. And I think some of the disservice that we do to ourselves in our local governments is trying to fix it through government, which doesn't typically work. You look at California, and I think we're trending that way, where we build all these high-density housing units that are, like what Mayor Porter said, rental. I mean, the majority of those are rental units, and that doesn't help with housing costs, because just like Mayor Porter said, all the rental costs are substantially higher, 2, 3, 4 times higher than what people are paying for mortgages, which is crazy. And that doesn't help affordable housing. That makes the gap even more wide than it already was. So my thought process is on this whole housing thing is, I think we do ourselves a disservice here in our city is if we continue to tailor to those developers that are just looking to build high density rental units, which seems to be the case because that's where the money is. And we're not really tailoring or opening up our zoning to developers that want to build, we'll just call them single housing units, but they don't have to be single housing, but it's a different type of housing than what, you know, these high density, even the townhomes just over here by the city are building are completely, and that's all rental. And that company is out of California. I did a lot of research on them because I opposed those, and I opposed them because I think that they just do a disparity and a disservice to our affordable housing and what we're trying to do. I think it's the wrong direction, but those are my comments. Thank you for hearing it.
Great. Thanks, Josh. And I think that, you know, that kind of circles back to those types of housing and the starter home and, thinking broadly, but also figuring out where there are some gaps missing and how we can use the general plan and the future land use map to structure some guiding language and exhibits for looking at either, you know, small lot, single family, or duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, things that are a little bit different than the multi-unit apartments that tend to be rental and have the high rental costs associated with it. And, you know, thinking about things that might be rentals now but have the potential for home ownership and the way those units are structured. So just making sure that we're not missing any housing types with the way we're structuring the general plan and the future land use map and then the zoning that implements the policies of the general plan. So I think these have been great comments, and let's go ahead and launch the last poll, Heidi. And
Susie, before you do that, there was
there
were a couple of comments in the chat. One from Larry Clausen. It says inequality isn't in the way the housing is developed. The inequality is based on the employment opportunities available to your population. More regulation equals fewer jobs in Utah. We have the inequality that jobs are only sought after if it is degree-based job. If you want more diversity and more people with equitable housing, the cities need to continue to focus on discussing for manufacturing and blue-collar work. And then also, E899VL replied to Ted. So if you're ready, I can read that, or if you want to discuss that previous comment first.
Yeah, I think just a great point about like understanding what types of jobs the city is catering. And so, you know, I think South Ogden, you know, like many of the suburban communities, sort of existed as bedroom communities to jobs in other areas. But I think that also kind of circles back a little bit to transportation and what types of jobs, you know, people can access and the relationship between where they live and how easily they can get to those jobs, and making sure that we're thinking pretty broadly about the transportation network.
And this is Larry Clausen.
Yeah.
Hi, Larry. I appreciate your comments about the transportation infrastructure, and I don't necessarily disagree. But I'm finding that that is a trend that is being used in our current government relations model throughout the country. This idea that government needs to provide more transportation. The fact of the matter is that our communities, especially here as we're going north, have an opportunity, because we have land available to us, to be able to bring in manufacturing and other types of industries instead of just more Cafe Rios and more stores. And so even though I do understand that there is a need for transportation, those transportation models are in a very densely populated areas like our Salt Lake City, for instance, where where they have the infrastructure and the tax base to actually maintain them, because they're lost leaders within the government. And so to be able to continue that narrative where transportation provided by government or other government agencies is something that needs to be focused on, that's, in my view, just a circular conversation for more government regulation. And we need to stop that narrative, because that is not helping our communities.
And so you're more specifically interested in seeing those manufacturing or blue-collar jobs either in South Ogden or close to South Ogden.
Or in our surrounding areas. A perfect example of that, if we look at Northern Nevada, Northern Nevada was prime because of their land availability to put in major things, including a hub of Amazon.com, which they moved from one location to another. Amazon, on their own, because of the model that they had, put in the transportation model to bring people out to their facility on their dime. It was extremely successful, and it was sustainable because they were able to ramp that up and add more jobs to be able to transport people back and forth depending on the holiday season. Hugely successful, hugely beneficial to the communities that had those hubs, and not a drain on government. And in so doing, it also then, for those communities that had those distribution hubs, affordable housing came hand in hand with those, because there were people that chose not to be on the bus, the Amazon bus, for 30 minutes a day. And it then led itself to that. Where government helped tremendously in that is in their education of community for first-time homebuyers, that our first-time homebuyers should not expect granite countertops in their kitchens. But that was the function that the government took, is educating on this is what you can do and this is how you do home repair. That's what we're missing. We look at Utah, we look at the generation that's looking for first-time housing. They're looking for a house that's absolutely perfect with granite countertops and stainless steel appliances. That's the unsustainable part.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Larry. Those are great comments, and I like that you brought the job factor into the housing discussion, because that is critical. And when we're talking about sort of the diversity of the types of people and the types of housing in South Ogden, it directly relates to the diversity in jobs and where people work and how close by that is and how they can get there. So great comments. And let's go ahead and do something.
Lori had her hand raised.
Okay, great. Lori.
I just had a question, speaking about starter homes and first-time homebuyers. Does South Ogden have a home ownership program at all?
I'll take that. No, actually, we don't. And I think this has been hit on a little bit, is exactly what's government's role in this. And I think that's something that we need to talk about as well. But it's interesting to talk about that this was led by business and not by government. We hear about those kind of stories, or less government involvement and government overreach and forcing private business owners to do certain things with their land and their properties. And so that's a balance that we face on this side somewhat. But to answer your question, no, we don't. Maybe that's something we consider. But I think one of the overriding principles becomes exactly what can government do, what should government do, and what's overreach and what's not, and what is just the free market. And I'd love to have more we don't have space in South Ogden for manufacturing or blue-collar jobs. So we're working as mayors on a regional approach, in a sense. But those jobs are coming in, and those people need housing, and that just exacerbates our problem that there's limited supply. And it's something we talk about all the time.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks. I think it's been great how we've been seeing just the connected nature of so many different things, and that's really the goal of the general plan, is to address these things in an integrated fashion, so that, you know, we might have a chapter that talks about land use, we might have a chapter on housing and one on transportation. A part of the goal with this general plan update is to have a general framework chapter that has, you know, key initiatives that really look at all of these things collectively, knowing that they're all integrated and that the decisions that are made about land use or transportation or jobs are going to impact those other areas of the general plan. So let's go ahead and launch the last poll. And our third topic, we're talking specifically about housing security and stability. And so the question is, for the South Ogden community, you know, thinking about the community as a whole, what component of housing security resonates as the top concern? So this might not be necessarily you or your neighborhood, but just thinking about the community as a whole. So the options we've got are there's evictions or other forced moves, just housing cost burdens, and that is specifically rent or mortgage payment that exceeds 30% of your income. The need for people to live with family or friends to share housing costs instead of having their own housing, so doubling up with other people, or, you know, having to live in substandard, poorer quality housing or neighborhoods that might need some repair, just because that's all that they can afford. So which of those seems to be the top concern in South Ogden?
Well, everybody's voting. At least let me just throw out. So 30 years ago, I grew up in South Ogden. 30 years ago, I got married, got an apartment in South Ogden while I finished school and got my first job and eventually got my house, like we talked about, kind of the starter home, the process thing. Fast forward 30 years, my own son and his wife, they live with me for 2 years and his kids, mm-hmm. while he gets his master's degree, because there really were no apartments in any kind of affordable range. And so I think that's where that's changed. And I think we sometimes think of these new townhomes and apartments as being for people coming in from out of state or the new move-ins. A lot of these are for our own children, for our own kids. Mm-hmm. And we have to have some things like that, or they don't even have a place to stay, or they want to be in South Ogden, but they can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great comment. We had that in sort of our side discussion, is do you think your children or grandchildren, you know, could live in South Ogden right now if they were looking to set up their own household? And you know, if that's not true now, you know, what can we do to help create those opportunities in the future as we're planning for housing? So, let's see. I'm just going to end up polling on this one, and it looks like our breakdown is between, you know, the last three. So, you know, I think the eviction issue, if that's not seen as a concern, that's great, because that is, you know, sometimes just the most drastic situation. And, you know, there's definitely, I think that's been on people's radar a little bit more with the COVID situation, and that there's been some moratoriums on evictions. But if that's lifted, you know, does that become an issue again? But really the cost burden seems to be the top issue. As well as, like Mayor Porter said, that need to double up and live with your parents or grandparents because you can't afford to set up your own household in, you know, either an apartment or a house. And then, you know, I think the last one maybe builds off some of the discussions that we had at the previous town halls about, you know, some of the older neighborhoods that may need a little bit of TLC to get back up to speed, some maintenance either, you know, in the housing units themselves or the infrastructure of those neighborhoods. So let's maybe just hear from anybody that identified that last question, the housing or neighborhoods that need a little bit of repair. So I think that builds off some of the conversations that we had earlier. So I'm gonna go ahead and unmute Kent. Great, go ahead, Kent. Thank you.
Okay, when I lived in California in North Orange County, our single-family homes in the alley, there were many, many apartments and fraternity houses and so on. And it was a constant battle to keep the alleys clean behind my place. Mm-hmm. So we instigated alley cleanup day and put notices on their doors, and everybody came out, cleaned up the neighborhood, cleaned up the alleys, and started over again. I don't know that what a government's role would be in something like that, other than to provide containers, big dumpsters or something, to do a spring cleanup without costing a fortune. But that was the way we kept the neighborhoods clean.
So I believe that there is a program like that in place. Doug or Lisa or the mayor, do you guys want to chime in? I know I've seen information about being able to rent a dumpster, or rent sort of a waste container either for yourself or for the neighborhood as a whole. But maybe I think that's a resident-led request rather than the city saying, like, we're coming to your neighborhood for this week of the year.
That's a great idea to have a neighborhood cleanup. But we do have dumpsters for single families, or for basically five residents have to sign their name to it, and then we bring one over for them. But I think that's a great idea, and I think some cities can do is ordinance enforcement, things like that, to try to make places look nicer. Mm-hmm. So there are certain things cities can do there that we probably could do a better job at.
Is there anybody else that wanted to chime in? Ted, go ahead.
Yeah, you've heard of the concept of a mother-in-law apartment, right? It goes back a long, long time. It is one of, if not the biggest trend, I think, among local governments right now, of a tool in the toolbox to explore housing. Meeting housing needs that I think can also, it has the advantage of perhaps helping somebody pay for a mortgage at the same time. If they're getting a little rent for a mother-in-law unit, then it helps them make ends meet on their mortgage. And I don't know if South Ogden has explored that, but hey, we're in the middle of a general plan process. So what are the pros and cons that you think of as you think of South Ogden allowing accessory dwelling units or mother-in-law apartments, if you will, in some or all of the city?
For informational purposes, the planning committee is discussing that. I think they're actually right in the middle of several discussions.
Yeah, I think it has come up for discussion before. And Larry, it looks like you've got your, or not Larry, sorry, Lanny, you've got your hand up. Did you have a comment you wanted to share?
Yeah, in my neighborhood, I live on a street that, within a one block section, there are only four owner occupied homes on the street. Mm-hmm. So when it comes down to, these city cleanups or things, sometimes renters don't care. Mm-hmm. They're renting. They don't want to put the effort into it. So I don't know how we address that as a city, how we get that. I have two daughters. One's trying to buy a home right now. She's in the process with no accessibility. There's just not enough of the prices. And some of these houses that could in a neighborhood like mine, that could be used for these lower, a lower income property. There's got to be a way that we can work to clean up some of these areas and begin this gentrification process that we all hope for when, older people die off and their kids start renting the homes and things like that. Some way to get these, to put some incentive to get them clean and neighborhoods fixed up so that it's a welcoming environment for people.
Yeah, I think that's a great comment. And I think just articulating the fact that, if you need, five homeowners to work together, but you might not have that on the block, then how are there different strategies the city can take to providing the means for doing the neighborhood cleanup? So those are great comments, Amy. Thank you. Let's see, Heidi, do you see anybody else with their hand up on this one?
I don't. But I had a question that links a little bit of what we talked about last week with the neighborhoods having poor access to transportation and other critical amenities, and just how that can impact housing security. We had a lot of comments last week on transportation and accessibility, and wondered what you all think of that.
That is the topic for next week, is it not?
It was last week.
Oh. What's next week?
We don't have one next week, so this is our last of the town halls.
Oh, my bad. I thought we had four. I was excited. I thought we had one more.
Well, maybe we can come back.
Let's make one up.
So, yeah, we'll make one up, and we'll do a wrap-up one in February. So, I think, linking kind of transportation, housing, and sustainability, those seem to be like three key issues for the general plan to address. But when we were talking last week, we had a lot of discussion about the infrastructure, both roadway maintenance, but also just providing, bike lanes and safe sidewalks that are, wide enough for people to walk on and maybe bike on. And so maybe like when we're thinking about neighborhoods and housing and those neighborhoods that need a little bit of TLC, thinking not just about the housing, but also the transportation infrastructure. I think that's kind of where Heidi was going in that regard. And Lanny, you talked a little bit about your neighborhood. Do you have any thoughts about what type of transportation related improvements might help your neighborhood?
Well, as far as a public domain, UTA is great at moving people north and south. They're not very good at moving people east and west.
Yep.
And that's the biggest challenge that we face. A lot of the former bus routes that we had, and UTA is a business model, as they took them out because of lack of use. But the bus infrastructure is not here anymore. Now you need to, for my neighborhood, I would need to walk down to Washington Boulevard or up to Monroe to pick it up, the bus, either way. So I don't know, transportation wise, I don't know what the city in a city with the makeup of South Ogden could do, especially in my neighborhood. It's the older portion of the town. I'm a third generation South Ogden resident. My neighborhood's built and established, and to widen roads is not really an option. To to add bike lanes, I'm a cyclist, so I love the idea of adding a bike lane, but there's just not the room. There's not the space to do it. So I honestly don't know an answer on the transportation thing. Sorry.
No, that's okay. You don't know. So, but I think, the east-west connectivity is a critical component of, both like within South Ogden, but also just linking people to the regional job network or nearby jobs or just other amenities or destinations that people need to get to, and thinking maybe a little bit more broadly about not just transit-oriented development being what's happening right around the Front Runner station or a light rail station, but what's happening in these surrounding communities, and where are those key intersections where bus routes either have been historically, or they are now, or they would make good locations for having those bus routes come back. And I think it was Heidi that talked a little bit about this and kind of some of the redevelopment of some of those big box stores. Heidi, do you want to jump in and just sort of reiterate some of what we were discussing earlier today?
Yeah, what we were talking about it is, what is a transit-oriented development, and discussing what it kind of helps anchor them, and that it's an anchor store, or something that's there that anchors that transit-oriented development, whether it's on Washington or Monroe. But it expands that, could it expand the density? Would it make sense to expand the density around something that's already there and creating this transit-oriented hub that's not necessarily, as Susie said, it's not at a front runner, it's not at a track station, but it's capitalizing on what's there, and then how does that, expand to benefit the neighborhoods adjoining those anchor tenants.
I would just say our new developments in the city are on major streets that already have bus routes. It's 40th, it's Washington, it's Harrison. We try not to definitely put them in, small neighborhood type things, but try to keep them on main thoroughfares. And so I believe for the people that are moving into those larger multifamily areas, they will be serviced by UTA. Bike lanes, definitely something we can consider and look at as well. Mm-hmm. But I think most people have our problems: cars and too many cars, and cars parked on the road, and cars parked during the plow. It tends to be our problem, is too many parked cars. So maybe people could have less parked cars if we had more bus routes and bike routes. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Kind of a trade-off. That was new.
Right. Well, we were talking about that density, and again, going back to transportation, that if we bring in this density, that's great. And it's even more beneficial if perhaps you can live where you work, and that means it marries that discussion we had earlier about jobs and that goal.
We don't live where we work. We don't, and we choose not to, right? Like we balance all of that. We love our cars. We live in the Western United States, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like let's embrace it. Let's look at these models. We don't need to become Europe. We don't need to become New York. Okay, and my husband's like tapping me because I think he has something else he wanted to add.
Well, and to go along with this idea of transportation, I think this is really where our political capital and our partnerships with our surrounding communities really come to play. If we focus our political capital, our city councils, our planning commissions, our city manager, with the idea and the goal of creating and forming these relationships with these areas that have business parks, the development parks that already for this work, then with that in mind and that plan established where we are actually bringing in those companies to those right places, that's where our mayors can go and sit at the table with UTA and very easily going, we just have this manufacturing facility coming in over in Ogden. And it is anticipated that X amount of people from South Ogden will be working there. If we can get a route that's from here to there, then all of a sudden UTA is really interested in what's happening here in north of Salt Lake, because there is an actual need. I sat and I spoke with a group of people in the community that I worked in just recently about buses, and they wanted more. But the idea that we're going to get more buses going around just because somebody wants to be picked up on second and third, because that's where they're at, that's not realistic for the business model. And so getting UTA to do something of that nature, it is going to be difficult at best. But if we look at this regionally and use our political capital appropriately and be able to say, it looks like here we could have some ridership, and then incentivize that as to some point of, having a subsidy for those riders that are getting to that manufacturing facility, that's something that is doable.
One of the tricky things to that can help reduce the cost of housing is allowing developers to provide less parking. And I imagine that as you hear that, all kinds of things are coming through your mind. It's definitely tricky, right? There's downsides to this. There can be spillover parking, but it actually can lower the price of housing where do you all weigh in on this kind of question? Is that something that the city should explore, changes to parking regulation, lighter regulation on parking, in exchange for the affordability benefits?
No, we're gonna, I think we have enough issues here already with some older standards of parking that I have serious concerns going that direction. Chime Hills with that triplex high thing is already like, that's a parking, gonna be an interesting parking, and that probably already had reduced parking. So I have serious concerns exploring that too far, more than what we already have on the books.
Okay. Looks like Lori's got her hand up. So Lori, go ahead. And Josh, I think you had your hand up, and so if you did want to speak, just let him pop your hand up again. Yeah, great. So let's hear from Lori, and then let's go back to Josh.
So my question was, what is the current parking? How many stalls per unit? And then I was also going to ask, just in relation to the gentleman's comment earlier about maybe gentrification or rehabbing neighborhoods. I know that Ogden City has the Home Sweet Ogden program, and I wondered if South Ogden has any type of similar program where they may, you know, acquire and rehab houses and then sell them.
Hmm. Let me hit on a couple of those things, if I may. So the Planning Commission just recently made a recommendation. The council approved a formula for parking, because yes, every developer has come in and asked for less parking, and it's received lots of people really against that, both residents, council members, because of that, the spillover parking issues. And so there's a formula based on how many one-bedroom units, how many two-bedroom, how many three-bedroom, and that they came up with a pretty fair number. I don't know the exact number, but so that has been addressed. And no, Ted, most people here don't have an appetite for less parking for reduced price, at least not yet. Salon does not have, we have not gotten the business of buying houses, buying properties. We had to buy a few to expand 40th Street, but that is not something that we really have the savings to do at this point, or I guess really had the need yet to get into the real estate business as a city.
Okay, thank you.
Let's go ahead and hear from Josh. Great, go ahead, Josh.
Yes, I just wanted to add my two cents about the parking thing.
Okay.
I just agree with what Val said. Is here in the West, everybody owns a car, even the people in the single family housing have too many cars for their own home. It spills over. In my neighborhood alone, there's cars on the road all winter against the city ordinance in South Ogden. Just, I don't think we have the time to go out and sit there and ticket every car that's on the road in the wintertime when the plows are going around. We just don't. So it's absurd that we would afford a developer the option to have less parking per residence when you can pretty much guarantee every household is going to have at least one, if not two cars, maybe more if they've got teenagers, whatever else. Again, I just reflect on this unit that went up over here on 39th Street by the park. I guarantee you're going to have spillover parking because you're going to have people visiting. You're going to have people that or maybe move in and stay with them, even though they're not supposed to. And you're going to have the 40th Street Park spill over with parking from that housing unit. Again, why I was so against that, because now I don't feel like my kids or I can even go over there and utilize that park. And that's the closest park to our neighborhood. I choose to use Ogden Parks instead because they have better accessibility for parking as opposed to a high-density housing unit right next to the park that's inevitably going to have spillover parking. So I am very opposed to limiting or reducing the amount of parking required for these types of units.
Right. Or we just go with the vertical parking model that New York City uses. So just a, you know, small investment to get that started. So great. This has been a great discussion. I've really enjoyed hearing everybody's thoughts. We've had a wide range of discussion points. So this has been a really enjoyable evening to spend with y'all. I just wanted to finish by reminding everybody that we have an ongoing community survey that is helping to support the general plan process. It's called the Community Wellbeing Survey. It is part of a statewide research initiative out of the Utah State University Extension Office. And I have partnered with the professor, Courtney Flint, who is running this project on a previous project, and she helped us craft a survey that added some additional questions in specific to South Ogden on the topics of housing and transportation and how the general plan can help support community well-being. So if you haven't taken the survey already, please take it. And what I've done is I've copied and pasted the link to that survey into the chat box, as well as a link to a quick 30-second video that Courtney filmed, just talking about the importance of the well-being survey and what it means and how South Ogden can be a part of this statewide initiative. So before you leave, go into the chat box and go ahead and copy and paste those links into your browser. And then take a moment to do the survey if you haven't. It should just be about 10 or 15 minutes. And then when you leave tonight, if you can forward that link to your five closest friends. We're just trying to get our response rates up. And, you know, we've got some competition out there. There's other communities that are also doing the survey. And we want to make sure that South Ogden has great turnout that matches some of those other communities. So if there are any last questions, let me know. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and look to sign off here and just double check. Looks like Lori's got one last comment, and then I'm just going to check the chat box to see if there's anything else in there. So go ahead, Lori.
Mine's not a question. It's just a comment to South Ogden in general, just to say how much that we enjoy living in this city and how clean and nicely kept it is. And it's been a fantastic community to raise our family and to live in. And so I just want to thank the city officials for everything you do for the city and for the people who live in it.
Great. Thank you, Lori. I think that sort of theme of just South Ogden is really, you know, a community of beautiful neighborhoods has come through in many of the conversations we've been having during the general plan process. And I think your comments sort of reinforce that theme and characteristic of the South Ogden community. So thank you very much.
I just like to say thanks, Susie, and thanks, Heidi, for all your work on this. Thanks, Ted. More importantly, though, thanks, residents, for your candid input tonight, for your suggestions. We will take note of all these things. Thank you for that last comment. I grew up in the city. I love it, too, and it is nice. We do have some things to work on, and we are trying to balance growth with those that have been here a long time and trying to keep everybody happy. And appreciate your input and for your help and your suggestions. And keep them coming just because this is over tonight. You email, you call. Myself, council members, city managers, and tell us what you have. We really appreciate your input. Can't thank you all enough for tonight and all the other nights as well.
Mayor, is there like a listserv or something? Like they mentioned a follow-up meeting like in February. Is there like some kind of listserv or something we can get on so it lands in our email box?
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you said that, because one last thing I can put in the chat if I can find it quickly. Actually, we'll just post it on the Facebook page, but there is, we do have a website for the general plan process. We've got a couple of different story maps that are on that website. One is sort of information about the community, and the other one is set up with a couple different comment maps so that people can go in and, you know, drop a pin, write a comment, or upload a photo that represents, you know, a favorite place or favorite image. And then the follow-up meeting, Val is with our tech, and I'll be sending out an email to pick the date for that. So look for that coming either tomorrow or Friday so that we can get that set up.
Cool. Thanks. And then Lisa, if you're able to add that like on the little blurb on the city website too, that would be awesome, because I'm not very active on Facebook, so cool, thanks.
Or just email me, Val. Email me and I'll have it, and I'll forward you anything that I get or know about it as well.
Okay.
Or you, cool. Lori, you know.
Thanks.
Great. All right. Thanks, everybody. Good night.